Glimpses of Fraser Family History, a collection of Due South snippets, written and read by Lutzula. Discipline. No, that's not fair. I did all my chores. Martha, again. Elizabeth sighs and looks up from her dough, through the doorway where Martha is glaring like a scrawny wildcat, clutching something small and square to her chest. Then John, heavily. Well, if you're wasting your time like this, maybe you need more chores to do. It's not a waste of time. Elizabeth turns back to kneading, but the voices continue. You'll thank me for this when you're older. The way you're dreaming over this nonsense, you'll never find a husband. A scuffle, something tearing. No, that's mine. Miss Edwards gave it to me. Don't take it. You should learn some respect for your parents. The slap of a hand striking, and Elizabeth feels a twinge of sympathy or regret. But the baby is crying again, and she warily dusts the flower off her hands and picks him up, cradling his head in her cupped hand. Elizabeth looks at Martha, white-faced except for the red on her cheek, her lips tight with fury. Meeting her eyes, Elizabeth reaches out her free hand toward her, but Martha turns and runs outside. Unplanned. On the sixth day she was overdue, she finally admitted the truth to herself. Martha sat down abruptly on a kitchen chair. She put her hand on the curve of her belly, as if she would be able to feel the tiny seed that had taken root there. There was nothing, of course, except the sinking feeling in her stomach. They'd been careful, but you could never be entirely safe. She closed her eyes, trying not to remember the sound of her mother, crying out as if something was being ripped from her, perhaps the baby, perhaps her life. And her mother later in life, like a wary, translucent shadow of a woman. Martha had sworn that would never be her life, working her hands to the bone for six children and a husband who thought it was no more than his due. Martha, George was looking at her, frowning in concern. Are you feeling sick? I'm pregnant, she said bluntly. You are, he said, and bent his head down. She couldn't see his face. George? She realized she'd never asked him, really. Do you want children? Yes, I do, he said hesitantly, and now she could see the way he was smiling, like unexpected happiness. Oh, she said faintly, and looked down at her belly again. No, George was nothing like her father. Perhaps she wouldn't turn into her mother, either. Sturdy. It was a perfect shot. Bob lowered the rifle and watched as the deer tried to flee, faltered, and then sank to the ground, dying. Good shot, Caroline said approvingly. He glanced at her and felt his face grow warm at her praise. Yes, he could admit to himself that he had been trying to impress her. He'd hesitated a little to bring her along on the hunting, though. Not all women could stand seeing blood. As it turned out, he needn't have worried. Caroline strode over to the deer, kneeling beside it and drawing a knife from her belt. She quickly cut its throat to kill it, then sliced the gut open. Pausing to fold up her sleeves, she stuck her hands in, pulling the entrails out. They steamed in the cool autumn air. Bob stared at her, at the delicate wrists he had admired when he'd first seen her a few weeks ago, in that beautiful summer dress. Her arms were covered in blood now halfway to the elbows. "Are you going to help me?" she said, sounding amused. Bob realized he was staring. "Of course," he replied, and went over to take care of the heart and liver. He'd been wrong, Bob realized. He'd been smitten with Caroline from the first time he saw her, but he'd thought her beauty made her fragile, someone he had to protect. But that wasn't who she was, and it wasn't what he needed. He needed someone who could work by his side and weather the bitter cold of winter. He needed a partner. Strangers. Robert was her son, but Martha had no illusions that his future wife would lead an easy life. Sometimes she thought that perhaps he ought to marry the RCMP, like a nun wedded to the church. He certainly spent enough time at his duties. Slight under her voluminous fur parka and looking a bit nervous, she had a moment of doubt. Robert stepped forward and made the introductions. Martha nodded and stepped around the desk where she'd been keeping track of book loans. "Take your coat off, girl, and I'll make us some tea." Caroline's chin came up, and there was a sudden spark in her eyes. "My name is Caroline." "So it is. Would you like some tea, Caroline?" Perhaps she was stronger than she looked, after all. Martha went over to heat water for the tea, and when she glanced over her shoulder, she saw Robert's head turned down towards Caroline's, wholly focused on her. Martha felt unexpectedly melancholy. She hadn't been especially close to Robert in a long time, but he was still her son. Now he belonged irrevocably to another woman. She sincerely wished them well. Books. Books everywhere, on shelves, along the walls, and in neat piles on the desk. There was a woman sitting there, adjusting her glasses as she looked up. Her graying hair was bound back from her face, and her eyes were cool and measuring, as if Caroline was a slab of cheese being weighed at the general store. Caroline might have taken a step back if not for the reassuring presence of Robert at her back. But when Martha called her girl, something stubborn woke in Caroline. She hadn't survived being kidnapped and almost flung into a canyon for Robert's mother to talk down to her. And she might not be educated the way Martha was, but she knew plenty about life. She knew how to trap and how to skin a caribou. She knew how to use the short summer, full of light and life, to prepare for the winter that always came. "My name is Caroline." "So it is. Would you like some tea, Caroline?" Caroline took her parka off and hung it on a hook by the door. Maybe she could get along with Robert's mother after all. Martha had gone to prepare the tea, and Caroline turned to Robert, who was looking at her with something like wonder on his face. Their eyes met. Above all, she knew what she wanted. Bed sharing. It was just a trinket, but it was very dear to him. Bob kept the necklace in an inner pocket, carefully closed, while he was out on patrol. He'd given it to Caroline before they were married, and later she'd given it back to him to remember her by on the trail. He touched the pocket and imagined her smile, how it could grow soft and sweet, or sharpen into amusement. An elbow poked him in the back. "You're hogging the blankets," Buck grumbled. "I am not," Bob retorted automatically as Buck tugged the blankets his way. The snowstorm raged outside the tent, and they were holed up for the night. Bob rolled closer to Buck's warm body to avoid the draft at his back. He covertly pulled the blankets back toward his side at the same time. "Wish I was home instead of out in this infernal weather." Buck snorted. "So Caroline can make you sleep with the dogs again." "It was only the ones," Bob protested. "Well, you probably deserved it." Buck shifted beside him. "You're doing it again. If you don't stop that, I'm going to make you sleep with the dogs." He yanked the blankets back. "You just try it," Bob said, drawing his scarf up over his face. Buck only huffed out a breath and tucked the end of the blankets under his side to lie on them. There was silence, or as much as there could be with the wind blowing outside. Bob drifted off into a half-sleep, with his hand over his breast pocket, and Buck's familiar little snores close beside him. A postcard, addressed to Caroline Fraser, Birch Hollow Cabin, Aklavik. February 10, 1961, Tuck. "My dearest Caroline, I'll be a week or so late. Buck and I ran into a bit of a snag on the way back from our patrol. Details later. We did work out what was going on down at the Dew Station. Things were going missing, and the ninnies at the station thought it was a Soviet spy. Turned out it was just a poor hungry chap who couldn't get employment. I hope Benton's done with his teething. Oh, and I sent you a new axe and whetstone by way of Thompson. I hope they reached you. Well, the mailman is waiting, and I'd better finish, or this card won't reach you before I do. Lord knows, I wish I could be by your side now. It's been too long. Yours, Bob." Condolences. "Sugar?" "Yes, please." Martha Fraser shifted the pile of books on the counter to retrieve the sugar for her guest, then sliced the apple pie in neat sections. "It's good of you to stop by, and thank you for the pie." "Well, it's the least I can do. If you need help with anything, just tell me." She paused and then added, "My condolences." Martha nodded her thanks. Her neighbor delicately used the tongs to drop a sugar cube in her cup and glanced toward the closed door in the hallway. "He's sleeping now." She had looked in earlier at the small inert body in red woolen long johns. His nose and his closed eyes were puffy, though he had not cried in front of her. "So he will stay here? Robert won't..." Martha shook her head, lips in a thin line. "No, Robert won't," as if he could. "Benton will stay here." Slipping. Constable Robert Fraser looked down at his hands. They were bloody. Oh, not literally, but Muldoon was dead, as surely as if he had killed him with his own hands. He had chased Muldoon into 6 Mile Canyon, watched him slip, grasp uselessly at the ice, and fall. Winter had taken him, would cover his broken body with snow. It had done Bob's dirty work for him. He had thought there would be a sense of closure, but no. Caroline was still dead, and he was still empty. And now he was also a killer. Oh, the RCMP would make allowances. Muldoon had evaded them all too long, and Bob would be a hero. It would be called self-defense, or an accident, but he would know the truth. It had been done for vengeance and cold blood. He turned his back on the canyon and walked away, snow crunching under his boots. After Muldoon had shot her, winter had taken Caroline, too. It had stilled her breath, stolen her warmth. Red blood had flowed into the snow, leaving her white and lifeless. He rubbed his hand over his face. His whiskers were half grown out. Caroline had liked him clean-shaven, but there was no reason to make the effort anymore. Bob wondered where he was headed now, and conscience pricked him. He should go to his son. Benton was with his own parents, and probably doing better there than Bob could do for him. Still, he should visit. The boy would look at him with clear eyes, Caroline's eyes, and Bob wouldn't know what to say. Benton didn't even remember how Caroline had died. Some trick of memory, no doubt, to protect him. What do you say to your son when you have blood on your hands? Pigtails. That Fraser kid was full of himself, Mark decided. He'd only been in their class for a week, but already he was the teacher's pet, raising his hand all the time. Oh, let me answer that. So what if his grandparents were librarians? What was so special about that? Mark wanted to mess him up a little. It was kind of like when Susie, who had the desk in front of his, was being all irritating and proper, and Mark had to pull her pigtails. She always squealed in a most satisfying way. This was why Mark was lurking outside the school with a snowball in his hand when Ben finally came out. Of course, he'd stayed to talk with the teacher after class. Mark threw and hit Ben from behind, hoping to get lots of snow down the back of his neck. There was no squeal, though. Ben spun around quickly, scooped up snow from the ground, and threw it. Mark ducked, but Ben had aimed low, and the snowball hit him right in the face. Mark spluttered and wiped at his face, which was drenched with snow. He opened his mouth, not really knowing what he was going to say. "So, you want to play shinny sometime?" Ben was trying to get the snow out from the back of his neck, but his mouth dropped open, like that surprised him a lot more than the snowball. Then he grinned, wide and not at all serious like he was in class. "I'd love that." "Dare." "You wouldn't dare." "Yes, I would." "Would not." "Would too." Benton caught the warning glance of his grandfather and snapped his eyes forward, shrinking into stillness on the hard pew. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Mark doing the same. Later, in the sunshine outside the church, Mark slipped him a note. 1 o'clock at the bridge, tonight. At 12:30, Benton slipped from his cot and soundlessly opened the window. He'd oiled the hinges that evening. The sun was dipping halfway below the horizon, and when he reached the bridge, Mark was leaning against the tree. "Hey, Ben, you scared?" Benton straightened. "Of course not." "Remember, to the other side and back. I'll go first." The bridge was old and rickety, some planks entirely rotted through, and Mark crossed it gingerly. At one point a plank gave way, and Mark recoiled as it fell to the river below. When he was safely back, he was grinning. "Your turn." Benton picked his way across carefully. On the way back, he paused, looking at the railing. It seemed sturdy enough here, and on impulse, he sat on it, then leaned backwards. The world spun around, and then he was hanging by his knees. His shirt slid down, baring his chest to the chilly air. Benton stared down at the raging water, almost hypnotized. The sound filled his head, and he almost couldn't feel his pounding heart. "Ben!" Mark's cry reached him. Benton pulled himself up, breathing hard. He felt like he was flying high, his body wide awake and singing. Recklessly, he ran the rest of the way. Mark was staring at him, half awed, half scared. "Ben, you are crazy!" It wouldn't be the last time someone called him that. Hunting. Holding the branches aside with his hand, Benton held his breath. There they were, the caribou. He was downwind. They couldn't smell him, and he watched them graze, unhindered by his presence. Their winter fur was coming off in ragged bits and pieces, and the male still had a velvet layer of skin on its antlers. He could shoot them if he wanted to, but he didn't want to. Quinn had taught him that lesson all too well. Now that he was older, he realized that the wrong didn't lie in killing them, because you had to kill to eat, or let other people do it for you. But killing something just to gain status, that was wrong. Benton's neck prickled, and he closed his eyes and listened. Wind. Chewing caribou. Mosquitoes. His own heart beating. And was that leaves rustling behind him? He whipped his head around, and Eric was standing a few meters away, watching him. "I heard you," Benton mouthed silently. "But not until I was close." "True. Anyway, come look at the caribou." But then the hairs on Benton's neck rose again, and he turned. Eric wasn't looking at the caribou, and suddenly Benton had had enough. "Why are you always watching me?" he whispered. They were almost nose to nose now. "Because I..." Eric trailed off. He was still staring. Then he crowded close and brought his mouth against Benton's. Benton reeled away in surprise and tripped. Eric lost his balance, too, and they fell over in a tangle. Startled, the caribou thumped away. Eric pressed his mouth to Benton's again. It was wet and warm and awkward, but strangely stirring despite that. Benton opened his mouth experimentally and kissed back. Oh, so that was why. The end. This has been a collection of snippets about Fraser family history, written and read by Lutzula. You can find more of my stories and podfic at lutzula.dreamwidth.org.